You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
I just got scared by the echoing sound of my own voice.
Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 16th season of Doctor Who, The Pirate Planet, which consists of four episodes that aired from September 30th, 1978 to October 21st, 1978.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Bisexual Brigadier for getting this DVD for us.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
Not only did she get us the DVD for this serial, she got us the DVD for the whole season, the whole Key to Time thing. So thank you very, very much. You can follow her on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. Before we dive in, we have some news and stuff. This episode might be a little bit echoey.
We might sound different.
Also, there might be the sound of ice. We are recording in our new kitchen.
Yeah, if you're patrons and you're watching us on video, you might recognize we have different things behind us. I don't think we're going to be recording in this room again. We'll probably record in the office where it is less echoey. There's carpet and it's a smaller room, but that room is currently full of boxes.
We're still in the process of unpacking. That's why this episode's a little late.
Yeah, we're currently recording this on, like, we had to, like, clear a space off of the kitchen table, which still has, I don't even know, God knows what, all over it.
Shot glasses, mostly.
Yeah, I don't remember owning so many shot glasses, but apparently at some point we acquired a lot.
That's the most alcoholic sentence you've ever said.
Well, here's the thing, because we were moving and I was unpacking, like, a bunch of shot glasses and a bunch of, like, bottles of liquor, and it's like, all of these things have been, like, in a cabinet somewhere for, like, 4 years, but moving them all at once makes it seem like we drink a lot.
After moving, I feel like I want to drink a lot.
Ugh, yeah.
I'm tired.
Do you want to do a shot?
No.
Yeah, let's do a shot.
Do a shot?
Yeah.
To celebrate the new house and our first podcast in this new house?
Yeah, and the shot glasses are right there.
This one looks dirty.
Yeah, they're all probably dirty. Like I said, we've never used them.
If you want to do a shot, I'll do a shot. There's also something else to celebrate about this particular episode. This is the first serial written by Douglas Adams.
Woo! I sound far away because I'm getting the liquor.
This is going to be a fun podcast. What are we doing?
Fireball.
Fireball? Makes sense. Put it in this one.
Do you want the boot?
Put it in the cleanest looking one. This one has my name on it and a penguin. Nope, it's gross.
I think the boot is bigger.
Jeez.
I'm going to do this little martini.
You should do the boot because the boot's Italian, right?
Is it?
Also, alcohol's like sterilizing, right?
Yeah.
The boot's Italian. Doesn't Italy look like a boot?
What?
Isn't that the shape of Italy?
I guess. I got the tiny beaker.
Do you? Or do you have the boot? That's
They're
not a
same.
Shot.
It just you can't tell because it's taller.
Alright, you ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, chug. Woo!
Cinnamon. Alright. Let's do a podcast.
Alright. Anything else we need to talk about before we dive in? I've been excited about this one because it's Douglas Adams. Because Douglas Adams is like a big part of our lives, really.
Actually, in fact, today we were talking about what we wanted to name the house. Apparently that's like a bigger thing. Like in the UK, people name their houses. They give them fancy names. And I want my house to have a fancy name. And we live right next to this
abandoned mill.
Yeah, it's great. And so I suggested that we call the house Millways. As a reference to Milliways.
Which is the restaurant at the end of the universe.
My derby name is Magic Thighs, which is another Hitchhiker's reference.
When we got married, at least three maybe four of my groomsmen. I can't remember. Four of my groomsmen were all members, including myself and Tony, were members of a Douglas Adams forum, and that's how I met three of the four groomsmen.
Yeah, most of my closest friends.
Oh, God,
friends are...
all of them have been on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Most of our closest friends and frequent guests of the show are people we've met. Well, I mean, I met Joe, and that's how I know all those people, but are people we know through the Douglas Adams continuum.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a weirdly big part of our lives.
Chris Cherry, Vincent Neal, Ray Friesen, all members of the Douglas Adams continuum, and all my groomsmen. Josh Spurgeon, who was on the Web Planet, he was my best man. He was on the Douglas Adams continuum.
He was only on
for a little bit.
You told him to go there, and so he did.
Yes. Also, Brian Snape from Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile was Gons on the DAC, as we called it, or some people called it the DAC. There was a lot of controversy over whether it was pronounced DAC or DAC. I was always a DACer.
Especially at DACCon.
Well, we called it Fruitstock, so we could avoid all that. But yeah, Douglas Adams is a big part of our lives, and like, honestly, without Douglas Adams, I don't think we would have been together, necessarily.
Yeah, because we actually, I don't know if we've ever told this story on the podcast, but we met through Vincent E.L., who does our theme song and who's been a guest on the podcast, Vince.
I was friends with Vince. We wrote stuff together because we knew each other on the Douglas Adams continuum. We made some videos together, and then we started writing together, and...
I liked his music.
Tony,
followed him on Twitter.
Well, because the reason was Dr. Horrible sing-along blog.
Yeah, that's where I saw him first.
Because...
on the DVD.
Yeah, Vince did a video called The Reverend, and it was a Evil League of Evil contest thing from Dr. Horrible, and the winners got put on the DVD. Vince's video won. Their video was put on the DVD. Tony saw it on the DVD and was like, I like that video.
So I think they were doing a live stream. At some point, they were just like, hey, who all is watching this live stream? Because I think it's like four people. I'm just going to put all of you in a Skype call. And that was the first time that I ever hung out with Joe.
Yeah, because I was hanging out just because I was friends with Vince. So, and you were watching Twilight and were like, this sucks. Let's do something better.
I was supposed to be cleaning my room, and so I was watching Twilight. And then I was like, honestly, because at the time it was like at that time where everyone was like, this is great. But like the backlash was just starting. And so I was like, I guess I need to form an opinion on this thing. And I put it on and I was like, I see.
So it was a combination of a distaste for Twilight and a liking of Douglas Adams and a liking of Dr. Horrible Sing-Along blog and a liking of Vince that all resulted in this very podcast.
I actually really liked a lot of Vince's videos, and then he had some videos up with you, and I was like, man, some of the ones he does with other people aren't as good. I mean, that never happened.
Okay. Because I was about to say, there's only two. There's Monsters Anonymous, which you were in. And there was the She series, which you took over the role of She.
Which I was in.
Yeah. Which originally starred another person from the DAC. And you took over that role.
Anyway, we should probably talk about Doctor Who. But just know...
Douglas Adams.
Big and important in our lives.
And yet I've read all of the Hitchhiker's Guide books. I've listened to all of the radio series except for the one that just came out. I haven't listened to that one yet. I've read all the Dirk Gently books. I've played both the Hitchhiker's Guide Infocom game as well as the Bureaucracy Infocom game.
Listen, I didn't know that you could save that game, so I never got the fucking Babelfish in my ear. I got I got annoyed right there and never got past it.
Oh, I used a walkthrough.
I would only use, there was like, because there's like the walkthrough that Douglas wrote, right?
I guess.
There was like one, that's what I had, and it would give you like hints. And then it like, it would give you hints and then like it would tell you the answer. And I'm like, I won't. So I just quit.
Let's see, what else? I've also played Starship Titanic. I've read the Starship Titanic book. The Deeper Meaning of Lift. I've read those. I've read Last Chance to See. And I've read The Sound of Doubt. I've consumed an extreme amount of Douglas Adams. I've seen the Hitchhiker's TV show as well. I have never seen his Doctor Who episodes.
Well, you saw this one.
Well, until now, yeah. So I'm kind of surprised that I didn't watch them. I mean, I kind of suspect part of the reason why I started watching Doctor Who was like, well, I'll eventually get to the Douglas Adams episodes because I can't just watch them out of order. That would be crazy.
You're astonishing. Yeah. You're an astonishing human being.
You ready to dive into the serial itself?
Yeah. Do you got an episode title for me?
You know I do. all right. Episode one of The Pirate Planet, which I have called The Vigil of Evil.
I gotta say, I feel like this is going really well. And I feel like we should do shots before all of our podcasts.
Podcasts? All right. This is not the first podcast we've done drunk, so that's I'm not true. Drunk, but on some amount of liquor.
Our Christmas one, that was a fun one.
Like, half of the guests were drunk, and one of them was Vince, who was very just sleepy.
Vince is a teen.
Which is, Vince was sleepy, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah. Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
How long ago has it been since we watched it?
It's been a couple weeks.
It was before the move. I remember very little. We did a lot. We did a lot in the time between when we watched this and when we're recording it now.
Maybe my notes will help. What does my first note say?
Your first note says, nice set.
Yep.
What's the set?
I mean, it's just an exterior of the pirate planet, which I forget the name of. It was like Zaddix or something. It was something with a Z. But it's just like, there's some neat little miniature sets. And I like them. It's a good set. And then we go inside the like command center where we meet Mr. Fibulae.
Okay, I do remember this motherfucker.
He has the coolest glasses. He's got like sunglasses on. He's like a scientist or something. He's basically number two. He's like a henchman. He's got like a cool like green coat on. He's got like some curly, vaguely Tom Baker-esque hair going on. And just some cool shades. He kind of reminds me of William Catt? The guy who played The Greatest American Hero.
I don't know the answer to that.
I think it's William Catt. But he is sort of... he's talking to a character we don't see right away, who has no name. He's never named in this.
Not once?
No, he's just called the captain.
Okay, here's the thing. They wait so long to, like, reveal him that I'm like, is he gonna be famous? Is he gonna be part robot? Or...
I mean, he is part robot.
A little bit, but not, like, when they finally reveal him, I'm like, that's just a guy.
he's got, like, a half, like, cyborg face.
He's a pirate captain, so instead of having an eye patch, he's got a robot eye.
Yeah, and he's got a Nintendo power glove.
Yeah, he's...
And he has, like a sci-fi pinky that he uses to work on things. And Mr. Fibulae will shine it for him sometimes.
But they, like, do a dramatic reveal, and I'm like, oh, who's that guy then?
He's just a very, it's very loud man. He screams a lot. He has another piece of his outfit, I guess. He has a arm ornament. He has a parrot. A
robot parrot!
I believe it is called a polyphase avatron.
Is it really?
It is really called a polyphase, or let's just call it poly for short. So, it's a pirate with a robot parrot.
So, what was the one that we were watching that promised space pirates, but we didn't get space pirates?
The space pirates. That's what it was called.
That's really what it was called?
It's called the space pirates.
And then it was really the space...
Cowboy.
Prospector, really.
Really, yeah. Prospector. Space cowboys.
Wait, what is this one called?
The Pirate Planet.
Oh my goodness.
Because the planet pirates things. We'll get there. But
this is one of those things where I'm always gonna like try to call this episode the Space Pirates, and then I'm never gonna remember and I'll be like, what is that one called?
I mean, you do that with every serial ever.
Good point.
You don't remember the titles of any of them.
Good point. I don't, there are people like, sometimes you're having like a discussion about a show, like I do this with you and Buffy all the time, and you'll recall like specific episodes of Buffy, and I'll be like, I vaguely remember that like season arc. I don't remember, aside from something like The Body or...
Once More with Feeling?
Yeah.
Like, Hush?
Yeah. Or even episodes of like Doctor Who, like... I probably couldn't tell you the specific titles of the most recent episodes.
Well, that's because some of the recent episodes are terribly
very
titled.
Good. And they're
the Sungenterdiber Conundrum?
But I'll remember Blink, and you remember the ones that...
stick out, yeah.
You seem to, have a recall of, every particular episode and every particular title, and I don't have that.
I mean, I don't know every episode of Buffy, but I could probably tell you most of them if you gave me a description. I'm going to go back to the parrot for a second. The robot parrot, which...
it's kind of ugly.
According to the making of that came with the DVD...
Thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
Thank you.
This fact brought to you by Bisexual Brigadier.
Douglas Adams' brother, I think half-brother, James Thrift, claims to have... that the robot parrot was his idea, and he was very proud of it, and Douglas would tell people it was his idea.
Until they built the thing.
Until they were, on set, and they were trying to film it, and it was being difficult, and then he would, wanted nothing to do with it. He was like, I am no longer proud that I came up with this idea. Also, I feel ashamed saying this. I've known James Thrift for a long time. Through the DAC. We're Facebook friends. And I added him because he was a DAC person. At no point did I realize he was Douglas Adams' brother.
Did you realize it watching the special?
Watching the special features. I was like, I know that guy. I'm Facebook friends with that guy. And then I was like, oh shit, it's because he's Douglas' brother.
That's why he was on the DAC. That's pretty funny.
I know a couple of... I know a couple of people that are involved with Doctor Who and Hitchhiker's Guide just because that forum. So I see them on DVDs and I'm like, I kind of know that guy. That's weird. David Haddock.
Oh man, David Haddock's super nice.
Yeah, he's on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie, the making of. You see him out in the odd, holding a towel or something, and I've hung out with that guy. He read my movie script. And there's another guy, Kevin John Davies, who did some of the graphics for the Hitchhiker's Guide TV series and stuff like that. So I've chatted with all these people. And some of these people I did not realize.
You didn't realize who you were talking to?
Yeah, I was just hey, that's just a guy on the forum. Scratch, who worked on the Aardman films. And Alan Scrace is his name.
I wanted to be Fruitstock again.
To me, they're just my buds. I wasn't even aware that he was Douglas Adams' brother. I feel bad. I'm admitting this on a podcast, but hey, if you're listening, I didn't realize who you were. I just thought you were one of the other...
a cool forum friend.
Yeah. Just a random DAC person.
But in a way... isn't he?
I mean, yeah.
He's just a forum friend.
Yeah.
It's just funny to see, somebody you know and be like, oh!
I can't believe it took me this long to realize it. But anyway, Robot Parrot. I liked it, James Thrift. I thought it was a great idea, especially what happens later. But Mr. Phoebe Lee tells the captain that they have found a new source of... Vasilium. I don't know what that is. It's some sort of element or something.
Well, you know, it's one of the 10 or 20 or so most rare and important elements in Doctor Who.
We'll get another one of those in a minute as well. Just so many of them. So the captain makes an announcement over the loudspeakers. It reminded me a lot of the Vogons in Hitchhikers. But he says that there's going to be a new golden age, and there's seven people standing in a courtyard, and they all go, hooray! And then he's like...
except for one guy.
Yeah. But he'll just say stuff and they'll just all in unison go, hooray! And they play that three times. Hooray! But yeah, one guy, Prelix, he seems suspicious
That's
about
a
it.
Great name, Prelix.
I'm gonna say...
He just seems not... as happy as everybody else. And that's it. That's the most amount of dissenting he shows. Is he doesn't cheer.
Yeah.
And they're like, that one.
And we see that a group of people are telepathically watching this. And they're like, we got another one.
Get him.
I'm going to say something right off the bat. There's a lot that's great about this serial. Side characters? Not so great. The villains are good.
I feel like, yeah, all of the time and intention went into, like, because there's a bit of business with the villains that happens. And I feel like a lot of what went in, like, a lot of thought went into that. And it was like, also, here are these guys.
Yeah, because there's, like, there's a group of, I'd say, four good side characters. And none of them are very memorable. Prelix is one of them. Then we come across three. One of them just immediately is dropped, almost like by episode two, and he just doesn't show up ever again, and you completely forget that he's a character. We'll get to those in a little bit. But these weird cult looking dudes are interested in Prelix because Prelix seems unsure about this new age of a new golden age. We cut to the TARDIS, where the Doctor is shining the previous piece of the Key of Time, and he puts it in a boot that he puts inside of a fridge. And that is how he is storing these precious pieces to the key of time. Key to time?
Security.
Yeah. And he's having a bit of a chat with K-9 about how getting the next key to time piece will be a piece of cake. And K-9 does not understand the phrase piece of cake. And he does not see how that is relevant.
He knows. He's just giving the Doctor a hard time. And I know it.
Speaking of giving people a hard time, the Doctor goes into the console room and Romana gives the Doctor a hard time. She keeps calling the TARDIS a capsule. And the Doctor's like, say TARDIS. It's called the TARDIS. Say TARDIS. And she's like, anyway, the capsule. I've never worked with like such an old, outdated capsule before. But she's like reading like a manual book.
Does she name drop T-40?
I think so.
Type 40 TARDIS here?
Yeah, I think so. She's like looking in the manual for it, basically, and like, she's like, we need to do this thing, and the Doctor comes over and looks at it and is like, huh, utter rubbish, and like rips the pages out and throws it away. He's like, I know how to fly this thing. I'm better at flying this than anything you can read in a dumb book. And he presses a button on the console, everything shakes, and he bashes his face on the TARDIS, which is a way of covering up something that actually happened in the last serial.
Yeah, we talked about it, the injury he had.
Yeah, where he got bit by a dog. And they, like, tried to cover it up with makeup in the last serial, but it was very obvious. So in this one, they just sort of had, like, he smashed his face. So, in canon reason now, even though he kind of had a problem before this episode.
Yeah, it's fine.
The Doctor says that he was trying to fly, but they got jammed for some reason. Romana's like, let me do it. And she goes to take the controls, and the Doctor, like, runs over to K-9 and, like, duck and covers. He's like, look out, K-9, hold on. And then she lands perfectly. She's like, well, he's good, real good. When he's very good. What do you say, K-9? Good, very good. They keep saying good, very good back and forth, and it's really adorable.
Yeah, K-9 keeps adding berries.
Very, very good. And that they've landed on the planet Calufrax. And the Doctor's like, ugh, Calufrax, dead and icy and boring. And as he's saying this, we see on the scanner that it's a very lively, like, town square. And not at all as he's describing it. And he's like, you've landed in the wrong place. Ha! You are a terrible pilot. But he looks into it and he finds out that, yes, this is the wrong planet, but it's exactly where they're supposed to be. This is exactly where Calufrax is supposed to be, but this isn't Calufrax.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but Calufrax is a good word to say. Meanwhile, Prelix, the cult people are doing this, like, ritual thing, and Prelix is, like, sick and out of it and, like, muttering stuff about how, like, they're all murderers and everything's bad, and we don't know what's happening with Prelix, but he's very sick. And his grandfather, Balaton, who is the character that's eventually going to disappear and no one cares. Because basically there's a point where they're like, we need to go off and do adventures. And they're like, do you want to go? And he's like,
no.
No. Because he's a very, very worried guy. He's worried about Prelix, but in kind of a dickish way. Not in like a legitimately concerned way. And we're going to get caught and bad things are going to happen to us way.
Like, if people figure out he's sick, then it'll be bad for, like, me personally.
But Prelix's sister, Mula, is worried in a more healthy way. She's more worried about Prelix's health. And then her boyfriend, Kimus, shows up. These are the people that will be doing stuff, and I don't care about them. the Doctor and Romana go out and look around. They've got that tracer thing, and the signal is coming from everywhere, which is confusing.
Not very helpful as, like, a tracker.
The Doctor says that thing he said in the last serial, don't trust gimmicky gadgets. Can you verbally?
Yeah, I'll roll my eyes.
And shook her head. This is an audio format, Tommy.
I'm making some good radio with my face.
Just for the rest of this.
That was a patron exclusive.
Just for the rest of this podcast, can you only express yourself through nods and gestures? God damn it.
They can figure that one out for context.
I hope so. So the Doctor tries to be like, accost random people that are walking by and say like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Where are we? And just literally everyone is ignoring him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hilarious. The Doctor like talks to K-9 like, why is no one talking to me? And K-9's like, you should let Romana do it. And as he's saying this, Romana is chatting up some dude in the background. He's like, why? And he's like, Romana is prettier than you. And he's like, is she? Like, he doesn't even comprehend that concept.
I think maybe he might be slightly offended at the idea, too.
Yeah. I think
he's pretty.
I think it's both. I think he's offended, and he's also like, oh, I didn't even think of, you know, attractiveness as even a factor for anything. She is chatting up this guy, and he's like, telling her everything, saying, like, there's a new age and there's new stars. When new stars arrive, they just get bunches of, like, jewels and stuff. And he, like, gives her, like, some rubies. And the Doctor is trying to interrupt this whole thing because he's very annoyed by the whole situation. Jealous. But he's not getting the attention. Romana shuts down the Doctor, though, and ignores him and continues talking to the guy and offers him jelly babies. She's taking his shtick. Also, this guy is very rude. She's like, would you like some jelly babies? And I'm like, oh yes. And then he like pulls out like five of them and is like picking through them very specifically.
I mean, that's what I do. Is that rude?
She offered him a jelly baby, like 17 jelly
when
babies.
When someone offers you candy, is it rude to specifically take only the red ones?
I mean, it depends on the size of the candy, but like, if someone's like, would you like one? And you take five?
Sometimes, you know how Stacy always has gummies, but only wants to eat like three gummies and then tries to pawn the rest of the gummies off on the rest of the office? When she does that, I'm like, thank you. Are there any blue and red ones? If not, I'm not interested with gummy worms. Because like, the orange and the green ones are nothing.
I eat them.
So I'm like, so I'll take like a couple of the red and the blue ones, and then I'll be like, thanks.
And then I get the rest.
And then you get you eat the orange and the green ones.
Yeah, that's a fair system.
All right.
Anyway, he's like, thanks for the jelly babies. By the way, watch out for the minty ads. Bye. And they're like, what's the minty ad?
What's a minty ad?
But then he walks away and bumps into a guard who is very suspicious of the jelly babies.
He is very suspicious of them.
And then there's just like a comic moment of him like, the guard's like, he's like, I got them from that guy. And the guard is like looking through a doorway at him. And the guy very sneakily like eats the jelly babies and runs off. Then the Doctor's like, shit, there's just jewels all over the street here.
And there's like a very small pile just because the scene needed it.
Yeah.
Of jewels. I don't know. It amused me when it happened.
There's some plot important jewels.
Yeah, it didn't look like.
In a certain spot on the street.
It didn't look like they were strewn about. It was very much like a, someone's gonna have to go over there and do something with those later. It's like in an animation.
Where one of the books is a slightly different color.
Yeah.
It's a little sharper than the rest.
What's gonna happen with that later?
K-9 scans them and confirms that they are indeed real jewels, and there's also like a really rare one. The Doctor's like, why have I heard of this before or something? And he's like, this is a very rare thing. I don't remember what its deal is, though. But I'm sure it'll be plot important later.
What's it called?
I don't remember. It was like green glowy thing.
Scringstone.
It's not Scringstone. Jethric. So the Mintiads finish their thing.
Which Every time you say Mintiads, all I hear is Mintiads.
Those are ads that I put out. My Mintiads.
Those are ads about Joe.
Follow me on Twitter, MintiPineapple. Okay, so here's the thing. So those cult people that were like, I don't know, doing something to Prelix, they say the Vigil of Evil is over. Spoilers, they're not evil. Why did they say the Vigil of Evil?
Because they needed to be misleading to the audience.
Maybe it was the Vigil of Evil was the process of removing evil. I don't know. But they also said they're going to get vengeance for the crimes of Zanak. Zanak is the planet. That's what I was... Their planet that they call it is Zanak. But the doctor thinks it's...
Zanak is where? Or what's the other planet?
Calufrax.
Calufrax. I can't remember if it's Calu or Cali.
Calufrax. So the doctor continues to not be able to talk to people, and they very much avoid him. But he overhears Prelix shouting in his fever state, "The life force is dead." So the doctor goes to check that out and kind of just leaves Romana hanging out with a telescope, which that guard that was very suspicious about jelly babies comes up and takes the telescope from her and says that foreign objects are forbidden. And he's like, "Are you a stranger? And she's like, "Yes." And he's like, "Strangers are forbidden." And then she's like, "Why?" And he's like, "That's a forbidden question." And arrests her.
For being forbidden.
For being forbidden. She walks away and just says something like, "Canine, don't." And he's like, "What?" And she's like, what were you saying? She's like, "I said, canine, don't. Get the doctor." He's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And drags her away.
Because Kanan was going to shoot him.
Because he's a trigger-happy
robot. Kanan doesn't give any shits.
Well, dogs don't have... Like, robot dogs don't have to give shits.
There have literally been times where it was like, "Hey, Kanan, did you stun him?" And Kanan's been like, "No. They're dead."
Has there? I don't think there's been...
That happened!
I don't know about that.
I feel like it happened to my heart. And you can't tell me that it didn't.
I think he was going to, and the doctor's like, no, just stun. That definitely happened.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of then. I feel like there was a time where he's like, "How long did you stun them for?" And Canine's like, "Indefinitely." Which to me means, like, I killed them.
So, Fibulae tells the captain that the Mintiads are marching, and that they have found another telepath. Prelix is the other telepath. For some reason, I thought it was the doctor for a while. I don't know why.
Yeah, that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes you... Like, after a serial, you will tell me things about it, like you just discovered it, and I'll be like, "You mean the major plot point that they said out loud with their words?
Yeah.
That's what you're telling me that you just figured out about it?" And you're always like, "Yeah."
Sometimes I tune out during exposition, which is bad, because that's where the important information is.
That's why it's there.
But the captain is like, "Find the telepath, or I'll tear you apart. Molecule from molecule."
He is so hammy. And I think what's absolutely amazing about him isn't just that he's so hammy, but there's like an in-story reason that other characters comment on about why he's so hammy.
What's that?
Well, I'll tell you in a little while.
Okay. But yeah, he alternates between like yelling. He mostly yells.
He mostly yells.
But sometimes he'll do that, like, molecule from molecule.
I think blustery is the word.
He's what I wanted from a space pirate.
Yeah.
That we didn't get. Look, oh man, could you imagine an episode with the captain and Milo Clancy?
No. No. No.
It needs to happen, though, right?
No. It's too... You know, it's like, you know how, like, chocolate is really good?
No, it would work. You're saying you can't have two over-the-top things, but we did that.
It'd be too much.
No, we had this guy, and then the, very rich guy. That, we had both the mahogany. We had those two over-the-top characters in the same scene, and it worked.
I don't know if it would work. It might be too much.
No, I want it. Let's see Milo Clancy and the captain duking it out. They both have, like, common plot lines because there's pirates and, like, rare fucking elements that they mine for. Anyway, the guards shoot the Mintiads that are marching to the city over the hills and dales, but they do nothing. The Mintiads are not affected by this. just little red dots appear near them, and then they knock over the guards with their minds. So the doctor is talking with Prelix's family, and they say that Prelix always gets sick when a new age of prosperity happens, when the stars change. Then K-9 comes in, scaring the grandfather because he's scared of everything. And the doctor has to assure him that K-9 is a friend. Isn't he a friend? He's a very good friend.
Very good friend.
Then the guards come in, K-9 shoots them, because K-9's a badass. But then the Mentiads show up, and they zap the doctor against the wall with their brain powers. K-9 zaps them back with no effect, and the doctor's like, excuse me, and they zap him some more, and he falls down and it passes out. And that is the cliffhanger.
That's the cliffhanger.
It's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have two titles for.
Are either of them good?
Nope. We got The Mining Planet.
Acceptable.
Well, it's deeper than you think.
Oh?
It's literally a mining planet.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then The Crimes of Zanuck.
Is that one deeper? Is there a hidden...
No, just the mining planet.
Okay.
The captain is told that the telepath has not been destroyed, and that, in fact, the Mentiads have taken him, have taken the telepath. He is very upset, and he's like, when I am upset, someone must die! And his bird...
That's how I feel in the mornings.
His parrot CSO flies off of his shoulder, and off-screen kills a guy. You think it's going to be Fibulae, because Fibulae is the one who gave him the bad news, but then it's just some random guy. But, like, the bird's just on his dead chest. I don't know how he killed him. Assuming he shot him, or dived into his chest with his pointy parrot head.
What? That's awful.
Yeah. Why not?
Because it's gross.
He's got like a sharp, pointy pyramid head, beak and stuff. That's how parrots kill in real life.
What are you talking about?
Parrots are vicious animals.
What are you talking about?
Don't copy them.
I've never seen a parrot murder anybody. Not one
time. That's because they're real good.
Just saying things now.
This is an educational show.
I bring
the nature facts.
I told you I
read Last Chance to See. I know all about
you
nature.
You don't know shit.
Parrots are cold-blooded murderers. I get parrots and toucans mixed up. Are they the same thing?
Parrots and toucans?
Yeah. Toucans got the bigger beak, right?
One of them sells cereal. Damn it!
So the doctor wakes up from his Mentiad-induced coma, and K-9 tells them that the Mentiads took Prelix. And K-9 says, I can track the psychic energy of them. So they decide to follow it. And this is when Grandpa's like, no thanks. I'm going to take a break for the rest of this serial. I'm here for no reason, but I got paid. Woo! That's the actor. And then that's when the doctor realizes that Romana, because they're like, let's head out. And then he realizes that Romana's not there. And K-9's like, I tried to tell you like 5 times and you kept interrupting me about this Mentiad bullshit. So they're like, all right, we're going to have to split up. Some of us are going to go find Romana, and some of us are going to go track down the Mentiads. And the doctor, of course, wants to find Romana. Okay, this thing kind of confuses me, having rewatched it. There's two different things going on here. One, there's a dumb joke, and one, there's a written twist. One of them was like, okay, the dumb joke was improvised by Tom Baker.
That makes sense.
That kind of contradicts the written thing that happens a little bit later. Because he's like, heads, you go this way, heads, I go this way, tells, you go that way, right? And he's like, flips it, and catches it, and it's like heads, and so he gets to go, and she's like, why would you do, like, you know, put that up to chance like that? And he's like, it's a double-headed coin. And she's like, that's not fair. And he's like, yeah, it is. The problem with that is that Tom Baker made a dumb joke. I still think it's funny. He does not actually throw that coin in the air, because they do a thing where, like, throw it up, and then, like, the camera pushes on them, and they, like, look up for way too long, and then they catch the coin. But he doesn't actually throw it into the air. He just keeps it in his hand and makes it look like he threw it up. And you can actually see it in his hand as the camera pushes closer to him. And then he pretends to catch it.
Okay, that actually confused me when we watched it, because I was like, is he going to throw it? That whole scene, I was like, is he going to throw it? And then he was like, heads. And it didn't read to me like a joke. It just confused me. I was just sitting there watching that scene, waiting for them to flip a coin.
No, he's trying to make it look like he threw it up, and then like it took way longer than it should have to come back down.
Oh, it just confused me.
So the doctor's going to go after Romana with Kimis, and K-9 and Mula are going to track down the Mentiants.
So none of those words held any meaning.
Kimis is the boyfriend of Mula. Mula is the sister of Prelix, the new telepath.
And they're all going to find the Mentiads.
The cult people that have taken Prelix.
It's just like, if you just tuned in just now to this podcast, one, what the fuck are you doing? You don't
stop. How podcasts work.
You don't just start an hour in. You deserve to be confused. Two, that sentence would make no fucking sense.
It barely makes sense when in context. So the doctor's going to go after Romana. And Romana is being taken by the guards to the main city. But is refusing to act like she's been captured. They're like, take her to this hover car. And she's like, all right, let's go. And she gets in. She's like, I assume you're driving. And then like they're flying. And she's like, I had a hover car. I got a hover car for like my 16th birthday. You know, if you did this thing to it, you get a lot better gas mileage.
She just refused to take anything too seriously. And I love that about her.
She's great. I love her so much. Episode 2. Or serial 2. Not episode 2. I guess it's episode 5. But like, I'm really digging Romana.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's weird to say, but like, she's one of my favorite companions.
I think we say that about nearly every companion. Has there ever been a companion where you're like, nah?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Ben.
Well, and because here's the thing, because you know, people always ask, like, who's your favorite doctor? And it's like, the answer is always whoever I'm watching at the time, because whoever, I'm always like, oh man, this person's great! And then like, I watch another season and I'm like, oh man, this person's great! And there were some aspects of 3 that like weren't my favorite and stuff, but there's still a lot there that I really liked. And like, at the time, I was super enjoying it, so he was probably my favorite. That's how I am with companions. I mean,
Other than Ben.
And Donna Noble's always going to feel very, like, important to me.
I wasn't big on Katarina, and I don't think the show was either. Well, they're bringing her back.
They are? Why? She's still with her?
Big Finish. Big Finish is going to do a Katarina story. I don't know.
Okay, cool.
I just heard the news about it the other day.
I mean, That being said, like, they've done a lot of interesting stuff with the Eighth Doctor that, like, they never had the chance to do.
That's true, but like, I feel like there was potential with the Eighth Doctor.
Damn.
I don't know what they could do with Katarina necessarily that they haven't already done with like
other
companions.
Yeah. I mean, they must have something. They did it, so.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll have to check it out.
Eventually. So, the Doctor is also informed about the air cars by Kimis, and they're going to borrow one. He has the dumbest plan ever. He throws a bag of jelly babies onto the hover car. The guard's like, what? And then, like, gets the bag, gets out of the hover car, sees a trail of jelly babies that he just follows. While he's distracted, the Doctor and Kimis get into the hover car and fly off and wave at the guard. And the guard just looks at them and waves back.
He gives the tiniest, weakest wave, and it's beautiful. What's amazing about that plan is, one, it's super dumb. Two, it works.
These guards are not brilliant.
No.
I love the wave. I love the wave so much. So Fibulee says that the last time they made a new Age of Prosperity, something broke in like a big engine room thing, and they're gonna need to fix it. He's like, or we could just stay here? The captain's like, no! And like slams his fist into a control panel. And as he's showing his rage, that's when Romana is brought in. So in the hover car, Kimis and the Doctor have a scene where Kimis just basically gives all of the exposition that I kind of zoned out during.
is that what your notes say? Do your notes just say, I don't know, I zoned out during this part?
They originally did until I refined them. He talks about there's minds that renew every once in a while when he proclaims that.
When he proclaims a new age of prosperity.
The minds renew, and he's like, was that bad? He's like, it's an economic miracle. Of course it's bad. And he just talks about, like, there's also new stars.
Because the planet's moving.
The planet is moving. Romana tells the captain that she's a Time Lord. He does not believe it. He gets really mad and is like, I don't want to hear any more of your lies and bullshit. And then she's also saying, like, she could possibly fix things. And he's about to, like, get upset and dismiss her when, which this character we haven't even mentioned yet, but she's been here this whole time. The captain has a nurse.
Okay, because she has been there the whole time, but she's just kind of been, she hasn't done anything yet. She's just been in scenes.
Occasionally doing, like, light comedy. Because he's, like, this big evil bad guy, but he has, like, this sort of, like, nurse, almost, like, therapist character going on, you know? Like, she's taking care of him. So it's, like, kind of humorous because he's like, rah! And she's like, watch your blood pressure sort of thing. And I thought that was the extent of that character. Watching it again,
it's obvious that it's not?
Yeah, like, there's, she is acting this whole time. Like, if you watch her in the background, it's great.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to rewatch it. Because Joe rewatches them when he makes GIFs. And I only see them the one time. I'm going to have to go back and watch for her then.
Yeah, it's real good.
She is technically, more than I've she appears
watched to this be. Serial 4 times now.
Why?
I watched it once originally, once to make GIFs, once with commentary, and once again with a different commentary. So
you
yeah.
You want another shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
While Tony's getting a shot, he gets angry and is like about to dismiss Romana. The nurse is like, calm down. Let's hear her out. This actually sounds pretty interesting. Which, knowing what I know now, is clearly her taking control of the scene. But at the time, I just thought it was like, watch your blood pressure sort of thing that's been going on. This is actually some really clever writing that hasn't... Oh, God. Which I don't think has been necessarily in the show before. This
yeah,
level.
There hasn't been a lot of, like...
Aha!
Twists.
Yeah. Maybe there is. If there's been, like, something twisty before, let me know. Refresh my memory. But I feel like this is the first time that there's been something this sort of twisty going on. Some sort of thing that'll be revealed later, and you'll be like, well, what? Because it legitimately caught me off guard. I did not see it coming. Did you?
Honestly, no. And it's one of those things where sometimes when people, like, try to do a twist, and you're like... If you don't see it coming at all, then it's bad. You know what I mean? You need to be able to look back and go, oh, shit.
Right.
I missed that. That was, and like you said, if you go back and you watch it.
It totally makes sense. It's not like, what? I mean, it's not the bad guy in Frozen. There are parts in Frozen where that guy does things that would not make sense for that character to do because they're trying to preserve the twist.
His motivation isn't consistent.
Yeah.
Plot dependent. Anyway, that's our analysis of Frozen.
Frozen 2 looks okay.
Do you think they're going to do one for every season?
Yeah. Frozen 3. What's another season? Spring. Then there'll be a summer beach movie. This is Frozen 4. I might have got those backwards. I don't know my seasons very well. Oh, shit. This booze has hit me.
Oh, no. We gotta hurry up.
So, what were we talking... So...
We're talking
Zasha Who. Basically, he gets Romana to look at the broken piece. I mean, she's like, I don't know, this thing is old as hell. It's probably this thing, which it is.
She says, like, because the captain's like, well, are you smart enough to fix this stuff or not? And she's like, I don't know. I didn't study antiques in school. But, I like that she's very clearly somebody who's, like, just graduated.
She's got that sort of, I'm very smart because I went to college. thing, even though she maybe doesn't know everything she thinks she knows.
She's competent.
She does know a lot,
she's
yeah.
She's definitely very competent. Are you...
I gotta be honest, this sometimes tastes like, you know when you've had, when you're like, if you accidentally eat the crusty bits of ketchup?
No! I don't know what you're talking about.
Like bad ketchup.
I've never eaten crusty ketchup, so I don't know what it tastes like.
Like if you've accidentally like... cooked ketchup or something and it like it's a little burnt or something.
No, I've literally baked. Never done that.
I don't know. It tastes like bad ketchup or barbecue sauce.
It tastes like bad ketchup.
Anyway,
it
I'm cutting
like
it on that.
Cinnamon.
It does, like there's an aftertaste that's gross. Anyway, basically this broken piece is vital to moving the whole planet. So the doctor and chemist, boring bland guy, come across a locked door. The doctor sonics it, but it doesn't work. I feel like every time he's used the sonic, it does nothing. So he uses a hairpin instead, and he's like, sometimes this technology is so advanced, the only way you can beat it is to go, like, old school, low tech. And he does something on that, and he's like, he seems to think it doesn't work, and he turns around all disappointed, and the door opens up behind him. So they go into this place, and there's a hallway, and Kimis is like, we must go fast! And, like, starts running down the hallway, but is just running in place. And he's just like, running, and he looks back over at the doctor, and he's like, looks over his shoulder, and he's like, oh, what the fuck? And keeps trying to run, but realizes that he's just running in place. And the doctor's like, come here before you hurt yourself.
That is exactly the tone when she says it.
He literally says, all right, listen, I have a very important thing for you. I want you to go back outside and guard this place, and I'll continue on without you. You're cramping my style, kid. He's like, oh, I don't want to guard. He's like, it's important.
Right, fine.
The doctor knocks on the wall. This thing slides up. He presses a button. He knocks again. It closes. He steps into the hallway and just zips down it. It has something to do with... I'm a little drunk. It has something to do with inertia, right?
So what it is it moves you very, very fast. Yeah, but it stops your kinetic energy. Is that what it... Is that the...
Sure.
What they say in it?
Sure. So if you, like, try to run in it, you can't. But... Because, like, it's... Everything stops, so it stays stopped. But if you get in it when it's, like, activated...
When it's on, you'll move. Go super fast, but you won't...
Because
feel
once
it.
You're moving, you're moving. An object in motion once tends to stay in motion.
Because once you're moving, you're moving. That's
an object.
That's the company slogan.
An object in motion tends to stay in motion, yeah? And an object at rest tends to stay at rest. That's what I was assuming. Is going off those rules, well, but like without any sort of barriers, like resistance or whatever.
Kind of. It's more about like... It's more about like...
Nah, I got it.
Okay. It's more about like when you stop.
Right.
Like you're going really fast and then you stop and it takes that like energy instead of you like going really fast and then stopping really suddenly so you don't have that like jerky motion at the end.
Okay. But while he's zipping down this hallway, he says... I'll never be cruel to an electron in a particle accelerator again! Which is a line Douglas will reuse.
He does that.
Honestly, I think his reuse of it is a bit better because it's less wordy. Which is, I'll never be cruel to a gin and tonic again. Because in Hitchhiker's Guide, it's like jumping through hyperspace is a lot like being drunk. It's unpleasantly like being drunk. And he's like, what's so unpleasant about being drunk? He's like, you ask a glass of water. Because it's a play on the word drunk. Not like, I'm drunk, but like, you drink a glass of water.
But like, how you get drunk.
Yeah. And then when they jump through the hyperspace, Arthur Dent says, I'll never be cruel to a gin and tonic again. So, Douglas reuses shit. I knew that already. I knew, like, Dirk Gently is based on some unused Doctor Who stuff.
I've seen a couple versions of Shada.
I mean, Douglas remade The Hitchhiker's Guide, like, 5 different times, so... And in different ways. So, he's constantly reusing stuff. But this is the first piece of it. Meanwhile, Romana's like, I can't really do anything with this piece. I'm going to need the doctor's help. And they're like, we must find the doctor! Send the crew to find the doctor! We must find the doctor! And the doctor, like, just walks in as they're, like, setting up a group of people to go find him. And he just, like, comes in like, hey, you guys, what's going on? What's happening? Like, just immediately goes into, like, being buddies with them. And then, you know, they probably pull weapons on him or something. I don't remember. The doctor and Romana are taken to the engine room, which is clearly just, like, a big power plant or something. Oh, yeah. Fun fact about this. It was, like, a nuclear power... Fuck. It was, like, a nuclear power plant. Fuck.
You're concentrating so hard. It was,
and they have an explosion in there at one point later on, and it was going to be a small, controlled explosion, and the guy was like, I don't feel comfortable about this, and he's like, well, let's do a demonstration outside so you can see how it's going to go, and they did it, and he's like, oh yeah, that's fine, and the director was like, that wasn't a very big explosion. When you actually do it, can you put a little bit more in it?
No, really?
Yes, and it was like way bigger than he was expecting when they actually did do it. Luckily, the whole place blew up and everybody died. No, it was fine.
No, for real, why are
for real. Why would you do that? He's like, hey, we got permission. Let's amp it up a bit.
That's so sneaky.
In a nuclear power plant.
That was a bad choice. That was the wrong call.
It's an effective effect. We'll get there in episode 4. But they examine things and are trying to sneakily have a discussion about, you know, what's going on. And are also being like, hey, don't trust the captain. He's bad. And they're like randomly yelling out numbers. And they're like, all right, we can fix this. We need to go back to the TARDIS, though, to get some equipment. And the captain's like, all right, doctor, you can go. But we're keeping Romana. You can't take Romana. And the doctor's like, oh, but the thing is, we have a certain lock on our door that requires both of us to be there. Isn't that pretty clever? And
I don't think that's true. I think he just made that up.
He didn't make it up. That's why he said, isn't that clever? Rather clever, don't you think? And they're like, all right, fine. Well, we'll have the guards escort you. And he's like, all right, cool. And they start to head out. And the doctor's like, come on, escort me, escort me. They're zipping back down that hallway. And the doctor is just teasing the guards. And I believe he says some things that are very similar to things Ford Prefect said to the Vogon guards in Hitchhiker's Guide. But he's just like, standing around all day looking tough must be very wearing on the nerves. And they don't react. And he knocks on their helmet. And he says, and I said, standing around all day looking tough must be very wearing on the nerves. He's like, just like, this must be a terrible job. They go outside and Kimas start shooting at them. Not at the doctor, at the guards. And the doctor and Romana duck down and the doctor goes, and now this happens. Which is relatable. That's how life feels.
And now this happens. I mean, what do you say? He's continuing talking about, like, how bad of a job this is. He's like, people are shooting at you. You should just give it up. But yeah.
And that's what he says when it's all done. Like, they're all dead and stuff. And he's just like, I'd give this up if I were you.
And now this happens is, though, did you make that into a GIF?
I did make that a GIF.
Good.
You asked me to, so I did.
Because I want to use it for everything. For everything that happens.
Well, everything that happens, happens. This just happens to be one of those things.
You're making a reference to something
yeah.
that me, you, and one other person.
No, maybe two. Maybe three.
Maybe three.
Four. It's a line from a comic I wrote with Vince that maybe will be out at some point. So they're like, all right, let's go to the mines. They get to the mines. There's a great bit that they go to, like, that little, like, elevator thing, you know, the big metal doors, and the doctor's like, hold on, we're going down, and they all grab onto the elevator, and then it just very slowly descends.
I think Romana's like, why did you tell us to hold on? And I don't remember what the doctor says.
I don't think they say anything. I think they just very quietly go down, like, what? Oh, this isn't as exciting as I thought.
No, they come back to it, and she asks.
Inside the mine is an ice cave. And a big old fucking hole.
A big old fucking hole.
The planet is hollow. Zanuck mines whole planets. They teleport their planet around another planet and mine it. And that's why the doctor realizes that one of the rare elements from earlier was from a missing planet. He's like, oh. And then, like, fucking Kimas. The planet that had the rare element was called Vadrinius 5, which is very similar to another Hitchhiker's planet, which I think is Sandrinius 5. Sorry if I'm messing these pronunciations up a little bit. I hate their weird words and B, I'm a little drunk. But, like, this element is from Vadrinius 5, and, like, Kimas holds the rock and he stares at it and he's like, I swear I will avenge you, Vadrinius 5. And there's, like, three moments in the serial where someone swears to avenge something or someone. It happens a lot, and it's hilarious to me every time because it's so over the top dramatic. I think it might be purposefully funny, but I'm not sure.
You can't tell.
So some guards show up and start shooting at them. They run away, but they run into the Mentiads, who say, we have come for you, doctor. And we zoom into the doctor looking concerned. And that is the cliffhanger. That is the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called Good Vibrations and Occupational Therapy.
That was pretty good.
So Prelix is a Mentiad now.
Have we ever described what the Mentiads look like?
They wear robes.
They wear robes and they look like, if you wanted to look like a ghost for Halloween, but you're only six.
You know what they look like? They look like stereotypical computer nerds from like a TV show who like never leave their like dark caves of a room.
But they're zombies now.
They got like slick back hair. And, like, they look sweaty, even when they're not.
They do look sweaty.
And they're a bunch of, like, pasty white dudes. Very thin, pasty white guys. So they look like computer nerds. They're not that menacing, to be honest. But they put up a special effect that blocks the guards. It's like this, like, weird little web thing. And the guards are like, ooh! And then, like, the Mentiads are like, come on, we must go. And Chemist is like, I don't understand. And the doctor goes, exciting, isn't it? I love that line. That's such a good line. I feel like that like sums up the doctor pretty succinctly.
Yeah.
Someone saying, I don't understand. And the doctor is like, I know, right?
Isn't it great?
Fantastic. Then we get a scene with K-9 and Mula. Mula? I don't know how you pronounce her name. And he's like, yeah, the Mentiads are good. And the doctor sent us to, like, rendezvous with them. I'm just revealing this now for some reason. He's like, he wouldn't have sent us here, you know, if he thought that we were going to get hurt. Oh, also, she's like, well, why did they slam him against the wall? He's like, oh, they didn't hurt him. They just, like, got him out of the way so they could do what they needed to do. They weren't harming him. They pushed him aside with, like, good intentions. And, like, she's like, so they hit him with good vibrations? That's why where my title comes from. But the doctor shows up and is like, K-9, the Mentiads are good, and I figured it out. Aren't you impressed? And K-9's like, oh yes, very impressed. And then a messenger tells the captain that the doctor is now with the Mentiads. So the captain kills this messenger with his parrot. And we find out that the Mentiads are a telepathic gestalt. They're a big old hive mind, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
None of them really realized they were telepathic until the planet was, you know, teleporting and destroying another planet, killing off everyone on it, basically, like, destroying everything.
Yeah, like, it's like the psychic
energy
shock of a whole planet and all, you know.
Because they were psychically sensitive, even though they weren't aware of that, because that was such a, like, huge event. It, like, fucked them up.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess opened up their telepathy a bit more. And the captain apparently has not been worried about these Mentiads because they're just a bunch of Mentiads. And he's like, they don't really have a leader. But he's worried now that the doctor is going to become their leader and they could become a problem. And Phoebe Lee mentions that it's fine, they've been mining crystals that are supposed to block psychic energy so that they won't be able to use their psychic powers anyway. And Captain is very pleased about this and tells Fibuli, oh yes, that's very good. Your death will be delayed. And Mr. Fibuli is like, oh, thank you. Your graciousness is so wonderful. He says 95% sarcastically.
I feel like we haven't talked about this character enough because every single one of his deliveries is like that.
Fibuli is sort of sarcastic. Yes. Yeah. But also, like, afraid for his life at the same time.
Yeah. And, like, it's, like, even that amount of, like, being afraid for his life can't stop him from being sarcastic. Which I identify with.
Also, speaking of, like, character traits, the captain will frequently, like, yell out body parts of some, like, being. I don't remember. Like, the beard of so-and-so. The torso of so-and-so by the hands of so-and-so. I think he, like, gets most of the body parts he can of this spiritual being. I assume it's like a god of some sort. Anyway, the Mentiads fill us in on a little bit more backstory thing about there was an evil queen, Xanthia, don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, who wiped out most of the people on the planet, getting involved in wars and stuff. And then the captain crashed onto the planet, and that's why he's, like, half cyborg now. And then he kind of took over, and then that's when people started getting sick. You know, they absorbed the planet's life force, and that's when they became psychic and all that shit, because they didn't realize they were planet hopping. I don't know. I guess they said that the queen was... Were they saying that the captain defeated the queen?
No, I don't think so. I think she just... They're like, there was this queen...
Well, they say that he took over. he crashed on the planet and took over the planet.
Yeah, but they don't. I don't think they ever say, like...
I mean, it's kind of implied.
Maybe.
Yeah, because there's a twist coming up. But, and then there's a bit where, like, the captain is working on a computer thing with his pinky. He says that he used to be, like, basically, like, before he got into all this shit, he was, like, an engineer. This calms him down, this, like, fiddling with electronic bits and
tinkering.
Stuff. Which is, that's when he's using it with his pinky and fibula, he polishes it. And that's when we cut to the nurse, and she's like, oh, that's very good. You're getting help through occupational therapy. It's good to, you know, make sure your skills are sharpened and honed or whatever, that you don't lose them. The doctor is trying to get back to the captain, I guess, or to the main engine room and stuff. And they're going to try to steal a hover car again. And he's like, well, if it worked once, it'll work again. Throws another bag of jelly babies onto a hover car.
What's amazing about this is it the same guard?
I think it might be.
That's pretty bad.
Because, yeah, the guard's like, huh? Gets the bag, starts following a trail of jelly babies.
Well, no, because actually it turns out he wasn't fooled.
Yeah, because they get in the car and they hit the button to start it and they get shocked. And then, like, the guard comes up. And I think the doctor goes, hands up! And then throws his own hands up. Tom Baker pointed that out in the commentary. He's like, I was the one who said hands up there. Which, I love Tom Baker in this show. Listening to the commentaries, he creeps me out a little bit.
Oh my god, why?
Because half the time he's like, you know, making jokes and stuff. And then half the time he's making really inappropriate comments of like, how he'd like Romana to sit on his knee and stuff. And it's like, calm down, man. But she's like, she seems fine with it, but it's also like, whew. He makes a lot of moaning noises.
What?
Oh, those legs. That sort of thing.
Oh, goodness.
He's a dirty old man. Anyway, we find out that they're planning to, that they basically have finished Scrunch and Calufrax, and they're going to jump to another planet to get some repair parts to fix some stuff. And the planet that they're going to, they call Sol 3, right?
Hey.
Yeah.
I heard of that one.
Yeah.
I live there.
You do. It's Earth, you guys. But they've got the doctor tied up, doctor and chemist, and he's like muttering in his sleep, and he's like, no, don't use the Janus thorns. Don't use the Janus thorns.
Which is a sweet callback.
How many times do I have to tell you? Don't use the Janus thorns. But he wakes up, tells chemist, don't panic. Eh?
Hey, I'm wearing socks that say that right now.
Yeah, I don't think this is necessarily a thing he ripped off for Hitchhiker's Guide, because don't panic is a pretty common thing to say in these sorts of situations.
Don't panic is always what I said. If I ever got a tattoo, it would be the words don't panic. I got a sticker on my helmet that says don't panic. It's on my lock screen on my phone. It's a reminder that I need constantly.
And if you haven't experienced any of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that is that the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a book that has all a bunch of information about everything, and on the cover are the words don't panic. And also, if you haven't experienced any sort of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
go get that shit from the library now.
Listen to the radio series, watch the mini series, read the book, maybe watch the movie.
I mean, don't do it first, but yeah.
It's got some good stuff. It's not the best. But the doctor talks to the captain, sort of fucks with his head a little bit. He's like basically goading him, but saying like, you wouldn't fight me because I'm defenseless. And that's not like a fighter's way. And then the captain's like, you're right, release him. And then like, Fibula's like, but what? And he's like, you heard me, release him. So they release the doctor. And the captain takes him into his trophy room. And shows him his collection of planets and jars that are all labeled. They're just like floating in the center. And they're like very small planets that he's crushed up. Which, hey.
Don't do that.
Also, Chibnall did the same thing in his finale last season. Not the Dalek one, but the... Not the New Year special, but the season finale.
You're right.
Not as well done. So he shows him this collection of planet jars, and he's like, it's very elaborate. Like, he's very specifically done, put these in a specific order. It was, like, geometric.
He's engineered it, and, like, the physics of each planet holds the other one in, like, a specific...
Yeah, it cancels out any negative effects that would happen due to gravitational pulls and all that sort of jazz, right?
Yeah.
This scene is amazing. And the doctor is pissed. And Tom Baker is acting.
He is. In a way that I feel like we haven't seen him do in a while. I wouldn't say before. I feel like we've seen him do it before. Probably since Daleks, maybe. That's the last time I feel like I've had this feeling.
I remember him acting in that weird one with the skull. The image of the Fin doll. When he like grabbed the skull and was like stuck to it and like terrified.
Oh yeah. We should probably specify what we mean when we say acting. It's not like we don't think he's been acting this whole time.
But I don't know, it's just like dramatic.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic. And he's just like, you have all of these toys, and the captain's like, they're not toys. And he's just like, then what is it for? Why are you doing this? This is horrible. You've destroyed all these planets. You've killed millions of people. What is it for? And he's like, legitimately upset?
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good. It's a good scene.
Like, it even throws the captain off a little bit, I feel like. Oh, man, it was so good. And then, like, the captain storms out. And then the doctor starts doing these weird things with his hands. He's, like, framing up the shot. I don't know. We eventually find out what he's doing. But he's basically trying to figure out the geometry of everything, of how it's all put together. At the time, I was just like, what the fuck is Tom Baker doing? And then the doctor realizes that they're going to block the psychic attack by harvesting Earth for whatever the thing is that blocks psychic abilities.
Quartz, I think, right?
Quartz, yeah, I think.
Which is funny because, like, I feel like people buy quartz to, like,
do psychic shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a property in it that's inherently psychic, and then you just reverse the polarity.
And then it prevents psychicness.
Yeah. K-9 comes in. Well, they're about to send the bird. I don't remember if they're going to send the bird to kill the doctor or if just K-9 comes in and they send the bird after K-9.
The important thing is the robot dog fights the robot bird because that's what we deserve.
And there's like people looking up at it, maybe not exactly in the right spot because it's CSO. But K-9 chases the bird, and as this happens, the doctor and chemist escape and they run into a room where they find a very old lady who they keep calling terrible names, like Hag, and, oh, she's terrible. And I'm like, that's a real person that you're talking in front of. I think they wanted her to take her teeth out, and she asked for more money.
Seriously?
Seriously. But she doesn't talk or anything. She's suspended in the last few seconds of her life. For some reason, this scene reminded me a lot of the Super Mario Brothers movie where they find the king. He's actually like just a big pile of mushrooms in that movie, but he turns into a king at the end of the movie. I don't know why it reminded me of...
You like that movie more than any other person.
Not necessarily. I think Ben Padden might give me a run for Super Mario Brothers money. He has it on Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. Well...
But the doctor says that the planets are keeping her alive. She's storing all of this energy. Keeping her alive. This is that evil queen Zavzim. K-9 catches the bird and brings it to the doctor in his mouth, drops it at his feet. See, it's a thing. There was like a robot bird, and I didn't even think, oh my god, there's a robot dog. Like, when that scene happened, I was like, yes, this is brilliant. How did I not see this coming? It's so good. So Kimus and K-9 are gonna go sabotage the engine room, and the doctor takes the dead bird to the captain. Also, I forgot to mention, he's found this weird box that we don't know what it is, and it'll become important in a little bit. But he takes the dead bird to the captain. The captain, not happy about it.
Heartbroken.
His polyphase avatron. And the doctor's like, listen, to be honest, I'm very sorry that it happened, but he was getting pretty annoying. And he's like, well, fuck you, and pulls up a wall, revealing the outside of the building.
And a plank. Because he's a pirate. And that's what pirates do.
And he makes the doctor walk the plank. And I want to mention, like, it's at the top of this, like, bridge. And there's, like, these rainbow railings. Like, different colored pipe railings. It's a really good set design. Anyway, he walks across the plank. The captain shoots at his feet. And the doctor falls off the plank to his death. And they all start evilly laughing. The captain, Fibulae, and the nurse. And that is the end of episode 3. The doctor fell off the plank to his death. We are now into episode 4, which I have two titles for. The Queen's Projection.
Cool.
And A Spanner in the Works.
I like them both.
So they go down
the... A spanner is a wrench, right?
Yes.
All right.
So they head down the stairs back to the main area and are laughing as they go. And then the doctor is also laughing and standing in the room.
What?
What
a twist.
And he's holding that box that he got from the room of the queen. And he flips a switch and the doctor appears on top of the... Another doctor appears on top of the... at the plank. And he's like, hey, doctor. The doctor's like, hey, doctor. Is a projection. It's not real. And he's like, also, you know who else isn't real? And he flips another switch and the nurse
flickers.
And he's like, well, that's weird. She should have just completely turned off. The nurse is a projection and she's the queen.
She's a projection of the queen.
But this thing has been going on so long and she's been getting so much power and energy from these planets that they've been harvesting that she's basically become more real over time. Like, it's making her real.
So she's kind of actually, she's been in the background from the beginning, just doing little fiddly things. And really, she's a real bad guy. She's been in control of everything all along.
Yeah.
It's a twist.
It is, and it's a good twist. It's an effective twist. I was like, man, that's some good ass writing. Thank you, Douglas Adams.
Hey, thanks, Douglas Adams.
So the doctor also says, like, I think you've got your math wrong. This isn't going to work. It's all going to fall apart on you. You won't be able to keep up your body. It's just going to fall apart. It's unstable. And she slaps him right in the face.
Right in the face! I mean, I respect that a little bit.
Meanwhile, the Mentiads have gotten to the place. They mentally drop some rocks on some guards. But I believe they've activated the psychic blocking stuff. And they can't mentally take out the guards anymore.
I thought they were going to Earth to get the psychic blocking stuff.
Well, they had already gotten some things going.
Oh.
They just needed more. So their power goes away and one of the Mentiads gets shot. And Romana takes a gun and shoots a guard. And I think she has a look on her face like, this is the first person she's, like, possibly killed. So, but yeah, it's a little disturbing. I don't know. She seems, like, a little shook up by it. That she shot a dude. Just for a second. Some acting going on. But meanwhile, the queen basically find out that she can control the captain. And like, he's like going to like stab her with something. And she presses some buttons and he like knocks the weapon out of his hand. The knife and like powers down. And then that's when the doctor finds out that they're about to mine Earth. And he's not down for that. And they've got 10 minutes till they jump to Earth. And just, I don't know, he's like discussing thing and he goes and he casually opens a door and then comes back and keeps talking. And then distracts them enough that he just runs out. And they're like, eh, it's fine, let him go. There's nothing he can do to stop it. But the doctor meets up with the Mentiads. And Chemist comes up and says that him and K-9 couldn't get into the engine room. So they basically did jack shit.
K-9's low on juice.
Yeah, his batteries are draining, and I think he basically just dries.
Yeah.
So they plug a power cable into him.
Literally, the doctor just pulls an extension cable out of the wall and goes, well, that's convenient, and plugs him back up.
And then K-9 blocks the psychic block. His dog has a psychic blocker.
And the Mentiads get their powers back.
The doctor's like, focus on my mind. We'll need it later.
Basically, he's like a walkie-talkie.
So the doctor and Romana go to that weird hallway, the Zoom hallway, kinetic inertia, whatever, bullshit. And, like, the guards are following him and shooting him. And then the doctor gets out and, like, presses a button on the thing. And the guards just fly out of the doorway.
So he turned that, like, inertia thing off. So instead of moving really fast and then taking all of your inertia and you getting out, it just shoots them through the hallway and they slam into the wall on the other side.
And the doctor's like, Newton's revenge. Meanwhile, the captain has ordered everything to be destroyed because he's like, they must have a counter-jamming frequency projector because the psychics are doing whatever. And he's like, tell the guards to destroy the counter-jamming frequency projector. And Fibulae is like, do they know what that is? He's like, destroy everything. But because the doctor said Newton's gravity, and like the doctor and Romana have gotten into a hover car and they're flying somewhere. I don't know where they're flying to. Oh, they're trying to get back to the TARDIS. As they're flying, Romana's like, who's Newton? And he's like, let me tell you a story. And then he basically says, like, he had to help him discover gravity?
Yeah, the doctor implies that he told Newton what gravity was.
Well, the way he says it is, he's like, I climbed up a tree and I dropped an apple on his head. And she's like, oh, and that's how he discovered gravity. And he's like, no, he just told me to get out of the tree. I told it to him later at dinner. I love the doctor. He's an idiot. But they get in the TARDIS and basically try to replicate the thing that happened at the beginning of the first episode when the doctor tried to land but couldn't. It's basically like two things trying to materialize in the same spot and it like caused it to jam and not work. So they're trying to replicate that so that the planet won't materialize around Earth. The planet and the TARDIS dematerialize at the same time and are trying to rematerialize in the same spot. Things get wobbly. He mind melds with the Mentiads. And they turn off the TARDIS force field, even though that could be dangerous, but it's going to help him so he can talk to him. And things are bad. And then they're like, we can't get into the engine room. And he's like, but there's a wrench in there, so they can use their mind powers to move the wrench. He's like, we just need to put a spanner in the works. And then we cut to a shot of this wrench in the engine room that floats up. And then we see two of the Mentiad's faces. It's like Prelix and another one. And the doctor's head. Just three floating heads in this room. And a floating spanner. A floating wrench. And then they fly it over to a machine. And then they're like, well, now what do we do? And he's like, throw it at it! And so it hits it. And then the stuff in the engine room explodes. The thing I was talking about earlier. The
explosion that was too big?
The explosion that was too big. So stuff explodes. So the TARDIS materializes in the room with the evil queen, the old queen. Romana's like, well, now what do we do? And the doctor's like, I think we should adapt the captain's plan. And she's like, what? What's his plan? Because everything kind of blew up and shook around. And in the process, Fibulae died. He got crushed by something or something.
Poor Fibulae.
And like, the captain's really sad. The nurse does not give a shit. But like, the captain takes Fibulae's really cool glasses and like, puts them in his shirt, and then he's like, I will avenge your death.
So much vengeance.
So much. Basically, we find out what the doctor says is that the captain had arranged those planets in a specific way in order to defeat the queen, but not blow himself up. Like, he's going to blow everything up but him.
He's going to blow up the whole planet. Like, not just her.
Yeah.
It was like the whole planet, but he was going to be safe.
Yeah, he'd be encased in some sort of force field. But the doctor's like, the problem is that plan would not work because Calufrax is not a real planet. He's going off this map that Calufrax is a planet, but it's not a planet. It is the key to timepiece.
Which, oh shit, I forgot that's why we were here.
And he's like, try it with the tracer. And Romana's like, I don't have the tracer. I thought you had it. He's like, what? And he like opens his shirt. He's like, oh fuck, I do have it. But they're like, we can't just take it because it's like, it is sort of part of this geometric.
It's part of the planet.
Part of the thing. So like, this
whole planet is around the key.
No, actually it's not right now. They have already crushed Calufrax. It's in a jar.
Oh, it's in the jar.
But it is like arranged in such a way that if you fuck with it, it'll cause like, I don't know, like a black hole or something. Like, stuff will go bad if you move it because of all of the way things are, like, very purposely arranged. Like a really big
boulder.
So, and he's like, well, she's like, what am I going to do? And he's like, I'm going to need to do something immensely clever.
And he just sits there for a minute. No, he doesn't.
The captain has, meanwhile, been working on some sort of device to defeat the nurse. And the doctor comes in as he's about to use it on the queen nurse.
The queen nurse.
And the doctor's like...
No, she doesn't have a proper name.
I mean, she's Zane Zania. But the doctor's like, don't do it, it won't work. And then he's like, eh. And then she presses some buttons on her little pad and his face explodes. His little cyborg face goes, psh, 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 and his arm explodes. And then he dies. And the captain is dead.
At some point, though, I mentioned about the reason why he's so hammy. At some point, the doctor says he was part of, like, an act to throw the nurse off the fact that he's actually kind of clever. So he's like this clever engineer who just decided to be like a dumb pirate captain so that like she wouldn't notice that he was engineering like all this secret shit behind her back.
He's still a bad guy though.
Oh, for sure.
He killed people with his parrot.
For sure. He's not, his motivation wasn't like, oh, I'm secretly gonna save this planet. It was like, fuck this person in particular, so much so that I'm going to blow up this whole planet.
And take off with the goods.
Yeah.
Because he has been, like, getting a bunch of, like, jewels and stuff. Then Kimis comes in and shoots the queen, and she disappears, and she's taken care of, I guess. And then the doctor says, sends everyone away, and then things got a very, like, hard sci-fi, and I couldn't follow much of the rest of this.
Yeah, was it clever, or was it technobabble? I wasn't sure. You know when sometimes you're like, is that technobabble or am I just dumb? And I had a feeling like I was just dumb.
Yeah, I've heard technobabble on this show before and I'm like, that's just
that's nothing.
Dumb technobabble. And this is the first time I was like, this might be legit, I'm just too dumb to follow it. Here's what I've got in my notes from what I've gathered from Wikipedia's. He put a force field around the shrunken planets. Then he will dematerialize the TARDIS, then Zanuck, then invert the gravity of the force field, dropping the planets into the hollow center of Zanuck, so they will expand and go flying off into space. And they will later catch up to Califrax with the tracer. But they need to do something about the bridge and the time dams, which the time dams were what was, I don't know, like diverting the energy to the queen or something?
Okay.
And then he's like, K-9, what do I need to do? And K-9 says, piece of cake. Because that callback. And he's like, blow him up.
She says, isn't that kind of crude?
He's like, it is crude. But very satisfying. The doctor goes out and they've like set up like some TNT or something. Like it's like a plunger. Tells everyone, like, enjoy your new planet. This is where you're going to live now. We're just going to blow up this area. Have fun. He's like, now, am I going to blow it up or you? And the Minty ads are like, we will. And they mind control they use their mind control to push the plunger down. They could do that with their hands. That's just extra. And then the nice set explodes. They blow it up. And then they're like, well, bye. See you later.
That's the end.
That's the end of the Pirate Planet. We'll be back after this promo for another fine ESO Network show. And we'll be back with final thoughts.
The PWR Spot Show is on the air every single week for your wrestling listening pleasure. We talk about professional wrestling. None of that fake stuff here, just Hulk Hogan, pile drivers, and cage matches. So join us at the ProWrestlingRoundtable.com or on ESONetwork.com.
And we're back. Hey, Tony, you know what time it is?
Past my bedtime.
Yeah, but what time is it for the podcast?
The end. We did it. Goodbye, and I love you.
Now, if you want it to be the goodbye, we got to do a segment first.
We got to do final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
This cereal was super fun. Cheesy and hammy, and that makes it sound like a sandwich. This cereal was a good sandwich. In that, like, you ate it and you were like, yeah, that was pretty good. But it wasn't like you had a hot meal. I'm so tired. Yeah, it was good and fun. It wasn't as good as, like, as it could be, I don't feel like. It had a couple of really fun characters. It had that really nice dramatic moment from the doctor. I don't super have a lot of feelings about it, partially because we did watch it so long ago when we moved and had about, I don't know, half a dozen million life things happen, and I had probably about a dozen life crises. in between watching this and recording this podcast. It's pretty good. Pretty okay. That's really all I gotta say about it.
Really? I have way more to say.
Yeah, go. You go for it.
Alright. Well, first, I think it's really funny, but it's Douglas Adams, so that's to be expected. I think it's really clever. Like, everything with the nurse was really good.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed that. I thought the premise is really clever. You know, this idea of a planet sort of going around other planets and, like, harvesting them, basically, is a really neat idea. His original idea for it was just, like, the doctor running down a hallway, and he opens a door, and, like, there's nothing in there. He just, like, starts to fall in, and it's just a giant room full of nothing, because, like, the inside of the planet is just hollow. There's nothing there. That was the genesis of the idea. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of good ideas. Apparently, the original script had a lot more ideas in it, and they had to, like, cull it down because it was way too much. But I think it's really funny. I think it's really smart. I do think the sidekick, well, the villains are great, and the Doctor and Romana are great. K-9's great. But, like, the other side characters are kind of forgettable. The ending is a little rushed and heavy on the technobabble to a point where I kind of was a little lost. And I think it does kind of end very abruptly. It actually kind of ends, like, three times as well. We blow up the engine room, but then we also have to, like, defeat the captain and then the nurse. And then we still have to deal with more stuff. It, like, kept going a little bit and it was just, like, heavily technical. So I think the ending was a little unpolished. I think the first episode was a little slow and the last episode were a little slow, but it's just weird because usually it's the first and last episode are great and the middle two episodes are filler. And I feel like this serial was kind of the opposite. The first and last episodes were a little slow and everything in between was fantastic. But yeah, I've been looking forward to this episode and I'm very happy to be here. I love Douglas Adams and I love this serial. And I've heard his next one's even better, so, which I think is City of Death. But, yeah, that's my thoughts. Before we go, anything we need to plug or anything?
Please watch Unseen World. Please. Pretty please. Pretty, 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 pretty please. It's really good. I promise.
At this point, well, there'll be more episodes out by the time this episode goes up, but
at the time of recording it, we've had 4 episodes air. Hopefully by the time this goes up, we've had 6.
Actually, it'll only be 5.
It'll be 5.
But yeah, there's been Howard Finster's Paradise Garden and the Gravity Monument.
Oak Ridge.
Mothman Museum and Hillbilly Apple Valley Garden and Toyland and Doll's Head Trail.
And Doll's Head Trail, yeah.
And then another episode will be out. Yeah, you can watch those on the Heartland Network. Check your local listings, I guess.
Yeah, you might have an affiliate nearby, you might not, and if you don't, you can watch the Heartland channel on your Roku, and you could also go to, I think it's watchheartlandtv.com, and we do our original Heartland productions stream there.
Yeah, so you can watch them streaming live at the same time that it airs on TV.
Yeah, you have to watch it, yeah, I guess it's kind of like multicast.
Yeah.
It's not like you can go and stream it just from the website on demand, it's when it airs, you can see it streaming.
But you can see it streaming on the Roku app later. It goes
on
up
demand,
like,
yeah.
Like the next week or so.
If you've got a Roku, you can watch the episodes whenever you want. I think it does take a while for the episodes to hit the Roku after aired. But they're on demand. You can, you know, watch The Unseen World at 3 o'clock in the morning if you want. I can't stop you.
You can catch up on all this good stuff. I love it. It's been really good.
Actually, I was just recently at the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and it was amazing. If you're anywhere near like within driving distance of Huntsville, Alabama, you should go to the Space and Rocket Center like right now. Being there and seeing the Saturn V, like the actual fucking Saturn V, was so cool.
I'm gonna tell on you.
Alright.
You were not super into the idea. I was like, you should go here. And I was like, and you were like, I don't know, we've been doing too many Southern things and blah blah blah.
No, that's not why. I was more like,
you didn't know if there was a story though.
I was afraid we had been doing too many big places. And if we needed to find more smaller places, because, you know, like we did like the bigger tourist attractions, and I'm like, maybe we don't need to be doing so many of the bigger tourist attractions. We need to be doing more of the like smaller.
But I don't honestly know how many people are aware of like the Space and Rocket Center being in Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, they're a big deal, but
yeah.
Yeah, more people can always know.
Yeah. And also, you went there and you had an amazing time, and I think you got an amazing story. So.
Oh, I got a very good interview. We got some just really nice-looking footage, and I'm like, I've got to get through the edits that I'm working on right now so that I can edit that one, because that one's going to be fun to work on, and some of them are less fun to work on, because not every time you come away from a shoot and you're like, oh man, we got some good footage. Sometimes you came away from a shoot and everything went wrong and you got what you could instead of what you wanted, and I got to edit some of those before I can get to this one. So
I think they're all good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But yeah, they're all interesting places and they all have interesting stories, so check out the show. If you need more information, or if didn't catch everything we said, there's a Facebook, facebook.com/CUnseenWorld. They're on Twitter and Instagram, CUnseenWorld. Tony co-created it. I help edit it. It's a real good show.
And Matt Golden?
Yeah, Matt Golden, previous guest and frequent sponsor of the Watch the Honor Rassilon.
It's the other co-creator.
Yeah, and it's real good. And I'm saying that not just because I worked on it, because like, I've made stuff before, and it's alright. But, like, this is, like, legit really good. It's, like, super legit good. It's the best thing I've ever... it's not the most professional thing I've ever worked on, because I was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
You were an extra. Chill out.
But, I mean, technically. but, yeah, it's a really good show. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
Now, can you produce this show a little bit better?
No, because I'm tired.
That's fair. That's honestly why we took a little bit of a break, because she's doing the show and we've been moving and we bought a new house and we bought a new car and car jacked and everything's been crazy.
We could not physically be doing more things. And like, we got moved in, which means physically all of our stuff is in the house, but it's not. It's all over the house and boxes and just out. And I like literally haven't been home. Like, Joe wanted to record this podcast earlier, but like on Monday I was in Huntsville. On Tuesday I had practice. Wednesday I went and I picked up a bunch of stuff for the house, and it was supposed to take like 5 minutes, and instead it took like an hour, and now it's today. So like,
yeah, I would if I was going to keep the same schedule that we do, I would have to get this episode edited tomorrow. And that's just not going to happen. So
we moved over the weekend. So, like, yeah. I feel simultaneously like I'm not getting anything done, and also like I haven't stopped.
We'll try to stay on track. There might be a couple of more times we need to possibly delay by a week or so, just till life gets less hectic.
And hopefully, I'd like to, by the time we record the next one, have, like, a setup in the office where we are probably sitting in the echoiest room of the whole house.
But it's the only place that there is a clear enough surface that I can set my laptop on.
Yeah, I think probably the office would be a good place, but we need to get, like, a table for it, and, like, we just need to set some things up a little bit. It's gonna be fine. I've overwhelmed myself. Why don't you do a wrap up?
If you liked this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssLine.com and be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It helps us out a lot by doing iTunes magic that I don't fully understand.
The more comments we have, the more iTunes decides we get to be seen by people.
iTunes magic. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watchyourassalon.com/support, and there you can find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon, and there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, which I need to do more of those, and live streams where you get to watch the episodes with us, and it's a lot of fun. We did the live stream for the Pirate Planet, which was publicly available for everyone.
Because it was Joe's birthday.
It was my
birthday. Happy birthday, Joe. Yeah.
So if you missed that, it's up on our YouTube. And
it's also our podcast anniversary. I don't think we made a big deal about that or anything.
Yeah. What, 3-4 years? 4 years, probably.
Is it four?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's been a while. We're coming up on our 100th serial. Like, our next serial is the 100th serial. So.
Are we going to do something fancy?
Probably not. We should.
I want a cake.
We should have a cake. But also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Bisexual Brigadier for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
You can follow her on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. She's rad. Also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song and our marriage.
Thanks, Vince.
And tune in next time when we talk about the 100th serial of Doctor Who, The Stones of Blood, with returning guest Nicole Mazza.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. We haven't had her on in a while.
When was the last time? I don't know. It feels like ages.
Yeah.
I feel like
she has been on before, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she did Image of the Findal.
And that was the last time then.
Yeah, you're right. It was Image of the Findal. But thanks for listening. Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye and I love you.
Got you, Frax.
Oh, fuck me.
And now I'm going to stop recording after Tony says fuck me and walks away.
I'm very sleepy.
And now this happens.
Hooray!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.